Welcome back to the Grumble Free podcast series. I just love that I'm able to lean into my friends, my mentors, to get inspiration on Grumble Free. Now, today's guest is Terry Lynn Underwood. She is such an inspiration to me. She's a prayer partner. I cannot tell you the number of times I've texted her and said, Terry Lynn, can you pray for me, please? And she always does, and I can always feel her prayers. Now, Terry Lynn is an author, a speaker. She's a wife and a mom, and we're going to share today, we're going to open our hearts and really share our struggles with grumbling. Now, so many times, especially if we are authors and speakers, we have to feel like we have to do everything right, but it truly is our kids at home that see that we struggle too. I love how Terry Lynn will talk about how she has taught her daughter about forgiveness because she has to go to her daughter so many times seeking forgiveness. Terry Lynn is a precious, precious friend, and I know you will enjoy this podcast.
You're listening to Walk It Out with Tricia Goyer, where we discover what it looks like to follow God and be swept away on the journey of a lifetime. Author of over 70 books, mom of 10, yes, 10, homeschooler and speaker, Tricia Goyer will explore what radical obedience to God's word looks like. It's time to hear from God lovers who've dared to say yes. Listen in to heart-to-heart chats and learn how others overcame doubts and fears. Discover how God used ordinary people to impact others one step at a time. If you're ready to get radical, get going, and make a difference in this world, you're at the right place. Here's your host, prolific writer, world traveler, people lover, and mega nap taker, Tricia Goyer.
Well, I am so thankful to have my friend Terry Lynn here today. So welcome, Terry Lynn.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here with you.
Oh, I am so thankful. Thank you for writing an endorsement for the Grumble Free Year.
Girl, I love this book so much. I cannot wait to talk to you about it.
Okay, good. So, how does your family struggle with grumbling? I know all of us have struggles, but sometimes in different ways.
Well, you know, I think our grumbling is so funny because what happens is there's only three of us. So there's my husband, my daughter, who's 19, and me. And they are both introverts. So their grumbling is actually silence, right? So they can be like pouty or withdrawn. And that's kind of how they communicate that. Whereas I am all the words. Like, why have you people done this to me? You know, I mean, I'm hysterical. And they're both just sitting there, you know, arms crossed, scowls on faces. And so, but reading your book was such a challenge to me because I thought, man, it's all grumbling. Like, even if you're not saying anything, your demeanor conveys the attitude of your heart. And it's really convicting to me.
It was convicting to me when I was going through it. I'm like, why in the world did I think this would be a good idea?
I know. And I thought, why did I say I would endorse this? I've known this was going to step on my toes, and it did, but in the best possible way. Like, it made me also sensitive to how often, like, the way I grumble is with words, and I would notice the more I talked, the more they pulled away, and I realized you don't have to use every word you know to convey your, you know, dismay.
Right.
Sometimes you can first not do anything, like, just, you know, step back from it. But a lot of times, I think for me, I tend to just want them to affirm that they've done something wrong or that I have a right to be upset. And so until that happens, I'm just going to keep talking and keep talking. And my people in my house are not going to talk back. Like, they're just not. They're just going to sit there, but they're going to pull further and further away. And the woundedness in that is just going to get deeper for all of us.
Wow. Yeah, and I think when we sat down to talk about our different grumbling styles, you know, there's complaining and whining and muttering. I mean, some of the kids are very obvious, but we do have those that do the pull away thing. And I think I've told John before, sometimes it's easier to have the one that is just going to tell you how they feel and is just talking back because you know exactly what they're feeling and what they stand. And the ones that are pulling away, it's hard to get them to come in, like to reel in, to communicate because I mean, they're still having the same feelings of grumbling and being upset, but, you know, they're afraid of conflict. Or, and I know that was me too. When John and I first got married, I'd always like run and hide in the bathroom because like, it was just so, conflict was so hard for me. I didn't know what to do about it. And now I'm learning more to communicate my feelings. And but it's hard. It's hard to actually like step towards someone and communicate when you just feel like withdrawing.
Oh, for sure. And like, that's been the biggest challenge for me since reading the book, especially, is recognizing to give people space to process what's going on with them without jumping in and forcing people to deal with something before they're ready. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of times I think like, if something's going on in my life and my first inclination is to complain about it, but I'm here by myself, so there's no one to complain to, then I will work through it. And by the time people get home, I'm okay. But if they'd been here, I would have just immediately launched into whatever, you know? And like, I think that for me was a huge thing, is realizing that sometimes we just need time to process, and giving people that space keeps the grumbling less, you know? Because
right.
I think like, everybody go to your corners.
Yeah.
And take 5 minutes and figure out what's going on inside of you, and then decide if it's even warrants a conversation, because sometimes it's really all internal. Like, a lot of what makes me grumble is about me and my expectations, and mm-hmm. has absolutely nothing to do with anyone else. And so when I have time to process through that and think about that, then I'm okay. And that's been such a good thing for me, because I've been able to talk to my daughter about that. Because she's in nursing school and it's a high level of stress, and she can get really frustrated with like her lab partner or her people in her study group, because she feels like they're not doing their part or she's doing more. And, you know, when we sit back and talk about that in terms of expectations and what's a realistic expectation, it kind of tamps down that desire to control the situation. And I think that has helped her not be so easily frustrated with her peers.
Yeah, that is so good. And I think, I mean, for me, when I was going through this, why did I ever expect that if I cleaned the house, it would stay clean? There's 11 people in our house. You know what I mean? It's just like, when you stop and think about what you are expecting, it like, just that 10-second pause, like, why would I expect that? But we do. Like, we think that our husbands should know we want help with finishing off dinner, or making, you know, finish making dinner, or we need help with setting the table, or whatever it is.
Oh yeah.
Like, we think people should know and they don't. Or we think things should go a certain way.
Yeah. And we assume that everybody sees things the same way we do. Mm-hmm. So like Friday night, we had Cassie and her boyfriend and my parents over for dinner. And I'm like rushing around. It's for my birthday. And I'm like rushing around trying to get everything done. And I'm like, oh, somebody, you know, the tablecloth needs to be on the table. And you know, there was, for most of my life, I would have stopped what I was doing, gone up to the tablecloth on the table, and then come back to what I was doing. And so Friday night, I just looked at my mom and I was like, will you put that tablecloth on the table for me right quick? And she was like, sure. And see, I would have been mad if I'd had to go do the tablecloth myself.
Mm-hmm.
But why would they think I need help when I'm so often the one who's like, no, I've got it, I've got it, I've got it. And then I get mad when they don't help. You know,
like, exactly.
I realize I set myself up for being angry or being hurt or being frustrated or feeling ignored or unseen, when if I just would say the thing, like, can you please, you know, whatever, put the tablecloth on the table or carry your shoes downstairs to your room. Like, if I would just say that and not wait for it to fester inside of me, you know, most of the time people around here will say, oh yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny because my grandma lives with us and she's 90, and she'll say, popcorn sounds good, or I wonder what new movie's on. And I know, because I was raised by my grandma and then my mom, who does the same thing. I know that means she wants some popcorn.
Right.
Or that she wants a movie on. So I will go and do it. So, but when I do the same thing, I'll say, you know, I'm in there cooking dinner. I'll say, the corn needs to come out of the microwave and be put on the table. I'm thinking the person knows that I want them to do it, but
yeah.
Then they'll just keep walking. And I'm like, what? How rude. But yeah. I never really asked. I never said, could you take the corn from the microwave? It's just, I'm saying it. And but my grandma does the same thing. And my husband will say, well, if you ask me, I will help you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like the way we've always communicated, but, you know,
and we not everyone's like that. In, right? We do bring our history into all of our relationships, you know, and so we know whatever that we kind of think a certain way, because my family's all super expressive and Scott's family's all hold it in, don't let anybody know, you know. And so that was a huge point of tension for us for probably the first 7 or 8 years that we, I mean, really for a long time, well past when it should have been a point of tension. It was because I was like, I need you to tell me how you feel. And he's like, why? I was like, because I need to know. And he was like, you don't. You really don't. Because I'm going to work through this and then it's not going to matter. And you're going to keep playing it over and over in your mind.
Right.
And there was such wisdom in that, but I just couldn't see it. I was like, no, you just tell people how you feel and then they have to deal with it. He was like, why would I want to dump that on you? You know, it just.
Yeah.
So we carry in all this stuff and nobody, I don't know, you don't know. And so you keep communicating the way you've always communicated. And then you get people who don't understand that form of communication. And you're like, why are you not doing what needs to be done?
Yeah, exactly. Yep, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, my family wasn't like big yellers growing up, but they would say like, oh, it would be nice if we could go on vacation. Or it'd be nice if I had a car like that. I mean, it was just like grumbling. Yeah. But it wasn't like they're yelling at people or whatever. It's just this constant kind of steady grumbling that I realized, okay, this is something I learned, but I don't have to continue. So yeah. I think it's helpful to like when we learn differently to do differently.
Yes, for sure. And that's why I was like, I was so proud of myself. It's so funny because when I said, hey mom, will you put the tablecloth on the table? And she was like, yeah, I'd be glad to help. You know, and I was like, so on the inside, proud of myself because that was a moment that in my head, I made a choice to ask someone to help me instead of complaining because they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is it, did it always work out that easily? No, because sometimes they help and they complain while they're doing it. But, you know, in that moment, I was like, see, that does work.
Yeah.
And I was knowing it. Like, and I think your book really helped me stop and realize how often I just will not even ask, you know, for help and then get mad because no one gave it to me. And then that creates tension in relationships that is really solely my fault because I can't ask, I can't expect people to read my mind. And so, and plus I say all the time, oh no, I don't need any help. So I got this. Don't worry about it.
And then when you want it, then they're like, well, you said you didn't need
some. Yeah, or they do it wrong, you know.
Right.
That's my husband and my daughter. They're like, we don't like to really help you because we don't do things the way you do. And I realize, you know, I've learned, I think, over the years that done is better than perfect 95% of the time.
Right.
And so do my people fold clothes the way I like them folded? No, they do not.
Yeah.
I have taught them. I have shown them. I've done everything I can do. But the towels are not folded the right way, you know, or the socks aren't matched or whatever, you know. But it's done. And I didn't have to do it. And that's an opportunity for me to say thank you and just to be grateful instead of to be like, oh, now I'm going to have to refold all these towels, which I have said a lot of times in my life.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And then the funny thing, you mentioned socks too, because I remember conflict with my kids because I would grumble at them if they would just like grab random socks and put them on. I'm like, no, there are folded socks in your drawer. Do not do that. And then I found out one of my daughter was unfolding socks to get mismatched socks.
Because that was a cool thing or like, whatever.
Yeah. I'm like, why would you do that? No. If I'm going to take time. But now looking back, I'm like, why was I making such a big deal about socks? Now we have a huge basket in our hall by our pantry. All the socks go in there. And people just dig through and find socks. I fold mine and I fold John's. Like, we have our socks. But everyone else, I'm like, have fun. I'm like, but I had to get to the point when I realized this is not important. Like, I'm grumbling at my kids. And it really, like, no one looks at their socks. Or if they do, they're kids. Like, no one's going to care. So.
But it's funny how we I think we transfer, especially in parenting, we transfer so much of our own identity onto our mm-hmm. kids' behavior and right. what we think other people are thinking about. And like, I honestly, I don't think I've ever looked at another kid's socks and thought, oh my gosh, what a terrible mother that child must have.
But we right? feel that, don't
but
we?
We think other people, and I, you know, I had a friend tell me one time, she's older, and she was like, you know that people only think about you about 1% of the time you think they're thinking about you.
Yes.
You're really not that important to other people, right?
Yeah.
You're not the center of their thoughts. And it's such a powerful reminder, you know, that that's true. And it does alleviate, I think, tension in our homes when we stop trying to live up to some perceived idea of a perfect mom mm-hmm. that pushes all this expectation on our kids, which just makes them frustrated. Because one, nobody knows better than my child what an imperfect mom she has.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, your kids are a lot like mine. I mean, they've grown up in a home where people, like, Scott's a pastor. And so everybody knows who Scott and I are. And everybody will say things to Cassie like, oh, you're so lucky. You know, your mom is so whatever. Your dad is so blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no.
Let me tell you.
You know, and I think it's so true. And our kids know. And so when we try to ask them to be something they're not for our sake, mm-hmm. then we're just inviting, like, we are inviting conflict and angst into our home that's unnecessary. And I think there's enough of that that comes with their hormones that we don't need to be saying, hey, why don't, let's have more.
Hey friends, Thanksgiving will be here before we know it. It's hard to believe, I know. Now, do you want to have truly a grateful holiday season instead of a grumbling one? Well, I am so excited about my new resource, The Grumble Free Year. It's available for pre-order now. If you go to thegrumblefreeyear.com, there's links to all the places you can pre-order it. And if you do, right there on that website, thegrumblefreeyear.com, you can sign up to get some free bonuses. And that includes some color sheets that you can print up. I actually use these very scripture sheets to teach my kids scriptures about not grumbling. There's also a gratitude journal that you can use during this holiday season. Now, it's online, so kids, even little kids, can draw their pictures of things that they're grateful for. The fun thing is, with our family, we put it inside of a binder, and then I'm going to every year add another set of this journal. So this will be a keepsake for us. We could print them up, write things we're grateful for, write 2019 on it. Next year, we'll have 2020, and over the years, we can look back and see the things that we were grateful for. So I hope you check out those free bonuses at thegrumblefreeyear.com. And I know if you want to be grateful instead of grumbling, I know this book is for you too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is so good. Yeah, just today, my daughter was doing, one of her assignments was to interview me. And it was like, when was your first job? What's your favorite memory from high school? Like all these things. And one thing was, what do you appreciate most about getting older? And I said, the thing I appreciate most is I don't care as much what other people think about me. And I meant it in a way like how I'm dressed or if I'm going to, you know, discipline my kids a certain way, or I know that I'm doing my best and I'm loving God and I'm loving these kids and I'm going to mess up, but, you know, I'm not so worried. But I remember being that young mom and just like so concerned how my kids looked and how they acted. And you know, pretty soon, I mean, I guess God gave me enough kids where he's like, here, you have so many that try to have fun keeping on top of all of them. So I'm like, okay, I don't care as much because I can't care as much.
But you know, also, like, because I just have one. And
yeah.
And I reached a point, and I think it was when it got really hard as a parent. And I thought, I am barely hanging on here. Like, mm-hmm. I am, every day, I am like, Lord, please. If you'll just get me through today, that will be enough, right?
Yes, exactly.
I can't even think about tomorrow, please. And yeah. I think it was in that moment when I realized how absolutely ill-equipped I was to parent my child the way that God had parented me, you know, mm-hmm. and just to know like his boundless love and grace and my very limited, you know, ability to get there.
Yes.
Like, I just became more and more aware of that. And as I became more and more aware of that, which I think came, honestly, around the teenage years, which are just, you know, hard, those early teen years. But I think that also translated in me this desire to look at young moms and not say, oh, just wait, which is what I always heard, you know.
Yeah.
But to say, you are doing a great job. You are a great mom. And like, I go to church on Sunday with a mission that I am going to seek out young moms and tell them what a great job they're doing. Mm-hmm. Because
wow,
I think that's the gift that we give to other mothers,
right,
is to be the one who says, man, your kids are fantastic, you know? And like, Cassie's older now, and we're in a season where we can spend our time however we want. And we have a lot of little kids in our church, and I've gone to baseball games and soccer games. I don't have to do that. There's no, it's certainly not part of Scott's job description or anything. But when I show up, the kids love it, but it is not a gift to the kids. It is a gift to the mother,
right,
to say, I think you're doing a great job, and I want to be here with you to celebrate your kids and to celebrate what's happening in your family. And I think if as our kids get older, our eyes turn more outward to serving other moms, like, that's such a gift, such a gift. Because I had senior adult women in my life when Cassidy was going through hard seasons who said to me, you're doing a great job. She's a great kid, and she's going to be fine. You know, she's going to be fine. We've lived through this, and you will live through it too.
Yeah.
And that was so much more encouraging to me than people who said, oh, you just think it's bad now. Because that was never encouraging. And like, you know, I say all the time, people say, oh, you're going to miss this. And I tell people all the time, I've never missed my child throwing a temper tantrum. Like, I've never thought, oh, if we could just have one more of those days. Like, there are things you're not going to miss. And
right,
so don't spend time beating yourself up over things that are developmentally, you know, appropriate. Like, three-year-olds throw fits. It's what they do. And your job is to help them learn as they grow up not to keep doing that, because a 33-year-old on the floor looks really stupid. And so you just help them navigate that, and you do it, and then you turn around and help other mothers feel good about what they're doing. And I don't know, I'm so passionate about that, obviously, that I just want to say to everyone, like, look at someone who's a season behind you and tell them, you're doing a great job. You are a great mom. And see how that changes how you feel about yourself. You know, I think it helps us feel better about ourselves.
And it gives them life. And it gives them, you know, just, I mean, it just changes their day. Because I have my, like I said, my grandma lives with us. And I'll be running around and sometimes in a cranky mood. And she'll say, sometimes at first it didn't seem helpful, but she'd say, these are the best years of your life. And I'm thinking, Grandma, seriously, I have a kid puking in the other room. The other kid is like running out the door half naked, you know. I mean, but now I'm like, you know what? She is right. Like, every day can be the best days of our life, but we have to, it's just turning our attention to being thankful.
Yeah.
And to appreciating them. And I think when she said that, I'm like, you're right, Grandma. Because I'm understanding what she's meaning. And it does, like, change my perspective.
She's not meaning today is the best day of your life. She's meaning
exactly,
this season is
exactly
beautiful. And I think we forget that. Like, I don't know. Cassidy now, she, because where she goes to school is like 45 minutes away, it's where my parents live. So through the week, she's a lot of nights with them. So it's not unusual for her to leave on Saturday or Sunday afternoon after church. And we don't see her till sometimes Wednesday night, a lot of times not till Friday. And so even though she's close by, she's not here all the time.
Right.
You know? And I think I've taken to calling these the bonus years, you know, because I feel like this is a gift that she's still close by and still has a room at our house and still wants to be at home and still comes to church with us. And, you know, I mean, a lot of her friends aren't doing those things. And I want to remember that this is a bonus. Like, these years are precious because they are not everyone's experience.
Yeah.
And I want to enjoy them. And I think how we phrase the different seasons of our children's lives and parenting stages helps us. Like, how we think of that helps us not complain about it or not be frustrated or not grumble about it. So when I say, and these are bonus years that we weren't really expecting, then that means they're good.
That's so good.
You know? And I think it's framing the conversation in our own minds and the context in our own minds that helps us view it in a way that keeps us from grumbling. Because it would be super easy for me to grumble about, and I have, about the fact that I don't have an office in our house and there is a huge bedroom downstairs that she's in one, maybe two nights a week. And like, I could be really frustrated about that. Or I could say, you know, I know she's going to be home on the weekends and I want her to have her own space, you know, and that's important. And this is not forever. And, you know, if I get rid of that room and move her into the little bitty, barely a room, she's not going to come home.
Yeah.
Because my parents gave her a big room. So, you know, I mean, like, it's just, it's that constant choice to say, you know, I don't need an office right now. There's lots of years left to have an office. These are years for enjoying her when she's here and having it be a welcoming place for her that she wants to
be. I love that. And I love, you know, what welcoming place, you know, now that she's only home part-time, but our homes now have lots of kids. I mean, I still want it to be a welcoming place and them to have fun and their childhood and have joy instead of me grumbling all the time. Because who wants to, you know, when they're adults, who wants to go spend time with parents who grumble and who are still on them all the time? I mean, I want them to build those relationships. I love that my two older sons both live in town and they're each about 10 minutes away and they're home. I mean, they're over all the time and they come for dinner and they come and they play board games with me. I love that relationship that we have because it takes pouring into them, you know, speaking words of kindness and just having a good attitude, like you said, with the bonus years. I mean, just having that mindset just changes everything about how you treat the relationship. And then they do, when they grow up, they want to come back. They want to spend time with you. And we often don't think about that. We're just so overwhelmed with the busyness of the day that we just grumble and grumble and grumble.
Yes. And I think I really think it's how we frame that in our own minds is so important. And that was, you know, I felt like in your book, when you talk about gratitude, like it's ingratitude that can make us grumble. And that chapter just resonated with me so much because I thought every Sunday morning, my spiritual practice is to get up early and spend time on Sunday morning looking through my calendar, you know, and looking through the photos on my phone and like recalling the week that I've had and looking for God and how He's blessed me in that. Because if I spend time being thankful on Sunday morning before I go to church, I am much better able to worship with a clean heart than if I don't. And so I think like the same thing is true for parenting. If we're really if we make it a point to say, I'm going to stop right now and I'm going to think about every good thing my child has brought into my life, then it's really a lot harder to be frustrated with the things that they do in this season that annoy us.
Right.
And so I, a lot of times will, on Friday, when I know she's coming home and I'm tired, and especially like a lot of times Scott and I have plans, and then she'll say, oh, John Mark and I want to go eat with you guys. And so of course we rearrange our schedule because if they want to spend time with us, there's also that part of us that's like, well, we come with plans. And so I have to reframe that and really make a point to say, I'm so grateful that even in those hard years, you know, even when we were most struggling to get along, that every night before she went to bed, I went in and kissed her on the forehead and told her good night and I love you. And that every time we fought and had, you know, that I did not let that end without a hug. And I would stand there. I can remember her being stiff as a board. And I would say, I will stand here hugging you until you hug me back.
Yeah. And they hate that, but they don't really hate it. I mean, they act like they hate it.
Yeah, and like I just, you know, all of those things, when we recall those things, it makes the frustrations and the moments that are hard, it makes them less, I don't know, it makes them less hard, I guess. You know, it's not that they're not still hard to deal with sometimes, but it makes it less hard because it's in the context of a relationship that you're thankful for and that's brought good things. Like God has used our children to bring good things into our lives and to show us His glory and to show us His character. And I want to see those things. And gratitude helps me do that. When I make myself stop and think about those things. So I ask myself all the time, like, okay, what are 10 good things that this person, you know, like I'll say, what are 10 good things that Cassidy has brought mm-hmm. into my life? And I will sit until I can make a list of 10 things, you know, and I do the same thing in a lot of difficult relationships too. Like, what are good things that this relationship has brought into my life? And it helps me be more generous with other people.
Yeah. Oh, that is so good. It makes me think just this morning, one of my kids, my most challenging one that is always keeping me on my toes. She asked me, she's like, Mom, what is one thing you wish you could change about me? And immediately like 20 things came to mind because she's loud. She's rude. And I don't know. I mean, just a lot of things. And I knew if I said one of those things, it would just crush her. Like, I just knew. And I said, if I could change anything, I wish I would have birthed you myself. And she goes, oh, Mom. And it just like, she was so like happy. And I'm like, I could have honestly said lots of things, you know what I mean? But she didn't need to hear that. You know what I mean? She just needed to hear that I love her and accept her and I'm glad she's mine. And, you know, so, it's all about how we use our words and how, if we have a grateful heart, grateful words will come out. If we have a grumbling heart, they're going to hear that too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like, I feel like that's one of the things. And I loved in the book that you weren't like, oh, everything was perfect for 12 months. because when we set out to be grateful and we set out to be generous and we set out to be gracious, it's mm-hmm. going to be hard. Because we have an enemy who doesn't want those things to be prevalent in our homes and doesn't want them to be prevalent in our lives. And so it's going to be a battle. And, you know, our mutual friend Brooke McLaughlin always says that we're fighting for our kids, not against them, right? And so that is true. Like, we have to remember who our enemy is, and it's never mm-hmm. our kids. And we become adversaries with our children, and we lose sight of who the real enemy is. And I'm constantly reminded of that in all of my relationships, but especially the people in my home. Like, these people are not my enemy. I am fighting for them, not against them. I want God's best for them. And sometimes I'm the thing that's getting in the way of them seeing God, and I need to move myself, you know, and I need to own that. And I think that's the most humbling thing about being in a family. Is that sometimes you're the problem.
Exactly. Many times, I find.
Yes, exactly. Like, a lot of times the reason there's conflict in our home is because I have unresolved conflict in my heart that I needed to work out with the Lord. And I have brought it out in the open and involved people in it when I shouldn't have, and I should have been dealing with it with the Lord. And, like, that's just such a powerful moment of understanding, I think, for us that we're difficult to love and that we have things that are hard, and we need to be very humble and very willing to acknowledge where we have failed. Like, somebody asked Cassidy what was the most important thing she'd ever learned from me, and she said this, and it hurt my feelings. I'm going to be honest, it hurt my feelings. But she said, I learned how to say I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
Because do you know how many times she's heard me say that? She said, my mom is the best at asking for forgiveness. Which, what does that say, right?
How we many messed times up a lot that we need to ask. I know.
You know, she didn't say, oh, I've learned how to study my Bible or walk with the Lord. No, she said, I've learned how to say I'm sorry for my mom. And I thought, you know, I mean, that's not the answer I would have chosen.
Right.
But I'm thankful that she learned that. You know, and I feel bad for her that that's the mom that she had. I guess, you know, I'm like, I'm sorry that that's the best that you got for me. You know, I mean, like, I also think, man, if we all could learn that mm-hmm. lesson, mm-hmm. right, to say, I was wrong and I'm sorry. And how does that change our homes and our relationships?
Oh, that is so good. Oh, that is so good. Okay. You shared so many great things, and I love how it's all about our heart. It's just going back to our heart. Well, Terry Lynn, I am so thankful for you being here today. I'm thankful that you endorsed my book. It's such a blessing to me. Let's just wrap it up by sharing where can people connect with you online, because I know that you're doing some cool things.
Well, you can find me at terrylynnunderwood.com, and then, of course, on Instagram and Facebook. And I am the Girdle Mom content manager for Million Praying Moms, which I love. I love, love, love. I love that ministry. I love working with Brooke and Aaron. I love using the Pray the Word journal every day. So, but really, my whole heart is just to encourage women to live well, to love well, and to just lean into the Lord in all things.
Yeah, that's so good. And then Million Praying Moms, I just want to mention, is just millionprayingmoms.com. And it is great. I'm like on the newsletter list or whatever, so I get something almost every day and encouraging and inspiring. So great, great stuff there.
Yes, I love getting to work with Brooke and Aaron. I'm so thankful that the Lord has opened that opportunity for me. And then, you know, just I'm at terrylynnunderwood.com. I'm doing a series right now. I don't know when this airs, but they'll be able to find it. I'm doing a series on 20 women in the Bible you should know. So it's really fun to look at women that people may not have heard of.
Oh.
Encourage them to dig into the Word. So, yeah, I'd love to connect with people.
Oh, I love it. And I'm sure they're going to come and find you. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Trisha, for having me.
I just love talking to Terry Lynn. Okay, the truth is we probably talked like 20 minutes before I push record and then at least another 30 after. I mean, she is such an inspiration and I just love how she just pours out her life. I think one of the neatest things was that even though her kids are gone and out of the house, how Terry Lynn pours into younger women and goes to the kids' baseball games and sports activities. That just really touched my heart. I know so many times as a young mom, I felt so unseen, like no one really saw how hard I was working. And that just encourages me. It just fills me with gratitude to see that Terry Lynn is pouring out to others. And I think it is so important to remember that there are people out there that are really struggling that just need to be reminded that they are doing a good job. I think so many times we get stuck in the rut about just grumbling about our day and about we're out of coffee and our kids made a mess, which is pretty much every day of my life. And we forget that there are other people that need encouragement. And you know what? When we are looking for those other people to give encouragement to, like Terry Lynn said, that it takes our mind off of our grumbles. I love how she talks about sitting down with her phone and looking at her photos and going through her week and just thanking God for all the things so her heart is filled with gratitude even before she goes to church. That is something I'm going to incorporate. And I think if we could do that every day, we don't have to wait till Sunday. We could do that every day and just thank God instead of grumbling about the little things that we aren't getting right or that we don't have in our life. Just thank God for all He is doing. Because when I look back at my week, I really can be blown away how God is showing up over and over again. And I forget that. I forget that in the busyness of just moving from one thing to the next. So maybe that will be encouragement to you. Now, I would love for you to check out the Grumble Free Year. I have more information at thegrumblefreegear.com. And if you pre-order before November 5th, I have some wonderful gifts for you that you can enjoy with your family. Now, know that this would be a great book to share with a friend. Maybe each of you can get a copy and talk through it. At the end of each chapter, I have questions for you to consider. And they're called reflection questions. For example, here are some from one of the chapters, actually chapter 5. What are your challenges when it comes to looking on the bright side of things? What are your family's challenges? That's great questions. Do you ever try to make external changes without focusing on internal ones? Where does that get you? How does that make you feel? So as you can see, this would be great to get with a friend, maybe read a chapter a week, although most people say they've read the book in a couple days when they get a copy. But share it with a friend, maybe share it with a Sunday school group. Know that it will be encouraging to me. Also, if you do that, like if your Sunday school group decides to join in, everyone wants to get a copy and work through the Grumble Free Year, just drop me a note at hello@trishagoyer.com and I will send you some goodies in the mail. And maybe I'll even, if you're interested, pop in for a Skype call. So let me know. hello@trishagoyer.com. But most of all, just thank you so much for just being here, for listening, and for trying to go grumble-free. I know that you can do it.
One Sunday night, my husband John and I talked to our family about the potential challenge of living a grumble-free year. We were finally sitting down for dinner in a restaurant at 10 p.m. after traveling 2,500 miles over the last 3 days. It was the first time we'd all gathered around the table face-to-face in a week. On the other two travel nights, we'd sat scattered around small tables at fast food restaurants. It was easier pretending our audacious offspring were other people's kids fighting over the fries that had spilled onto the paper-lined tray that way. Hey, you got 3 extra fries. Not fair. I'm not going to let you borrow my DVD player for the next 200 miles. Now my stomach clenched, despite the non-deep-fried aromas coming from the restaurant kitchen. My knees quivered under the wooden table, an upgrade from brown formica. Parenting was hard enough. Did I honestly want to pinky promise the next 12 months of my life to a fleeting fantasy that my children could communicate without complaint? And retort without repine? I softly bit my lip, knowing I had to try. We had to try. Communication in our home had dropped to the level of mumbles and grumbles, moans and whines. We couldn't live this way anymore, unless I invested in noise-canceling headphones. The problem was, society frowned upon parents who muted their children. More importantly, even if I couldn't hear the rumbles, it wouldn't mean my children weren't bemoaning every single thing in their lives. I've been talking with my agent about writing a book that involves all of you. My lips pressed into a tight smile. But maybe this isn't the best time to discuss it since it's so late and we've just driven so far. As I calculated, we'd gone the equivalent to the distance between Barcelona, Spain, and Moscow, Russia, taking all the back roads. Mom, you have to tell us now, pleaded 14-year-old Maddie as she sat next to her twin, Grace, who bounced in her seat. These two were the most active of our bunch of 8 traveling children. They laughed loud, lived big, and made the Tasmanian devil look like an innocent, frolicking lamb in comparison. Will the book include our names and pictures? Asked 12-year-old Alexis. Will we become famous? Fame was very important to Alexis, who would tell every new person she met that her mom had walked the red carpet. Yes, I did walk the red carpet at Grauman's Chinese Theater after I wrote the novelization of the movie Mom's Night Out. Having been moved around quite a bit in foster care since she was 5 years old, Alexis had learned how to make friends quickly. I could see from the twinkle in her eyes that any chance to be known and become popular, she would consider a win. I don't know about pictures, but I will use your names, or at least pseudonyms, I answered. Grace stopped her bouncing. What's that? She called too loudly. Thankfully, there were very few other customers that time of night. They're false names, John stirred his straw in his soda. It's just safer that way, I nodded. That's right. You might not want everyone reading or listening to this book to Google you. I want everyone Googling me, Alexis smiled and tossed her dark hair back over her shoulder, because I'm fabulous. I chuckled. Yes, yes, I know you are. I don't want everyone to Google me. That's creepy. Grace looked to her twin to back her up. When Maddie nodded in agreement, Grace's eyes glanced back and focused on mine. What's my name going to be? I get to help pick it, right? Of course, if we decide we want to do this challenge. I chuckled at her enthusiasm as I shook my head and gave in to the kids' demands to keep talking. We can talk about it. We don't have to start right away. It's just something we have to think about. A chorus of voices rose in unison. What is it? I looked to John. He nodded, urging me on. Well, our idea is called A Grumble-Free Year. A family of 11 takes on the challenge, or something like that. Grace's eyes widened. You're funny. Maddie shook her head. Yeah, right. I think we can do it, piped up 7-year-old Allie. I looked down at her as she sat serenely next to me. She gave me her puppy dog eye look, feigning innocence, as if. I think we can too, added 9-year-old Sissy. Those two were usually quieter, and their eagerness to take on the challenge surprised me. Wait, what are we doing? 6-year-old Buddy asked. The youngest boy, after 6 girls in a row, he was used to conversation swirling around him. Lots of chattery, dramatic conversation, and it usually took him a minute to catch on. Voices rose, with those who believed in the project speaking up and others who thought the idea was crazy adding their thoughts to the mix. I projected my voice over the din. We know it sounds challenging. Dad and I know it'll take a lot of work. And that's why we want to offer an incentive. I turned to John. Do you want to tell them? Okay, like Mom said, we've been talking about it, and this is going to take a lot of intention from all of us and a lot of working together. But if we try really hard, I was thinking we could all go on a cruise at the end of the year to celebrate a year of working to be grumble-free. Excitement built with questions about the cruise. My favorite was from Grace. Can we have our own beds on the ship? When you come from a large family that likes to travel, the question made sense. We usually piled kids into beds in hotel rooms or sometimes on the floor. I laughed. Yes, I'm sure we'll find a way for everyone to have his or her own bed. Wait! Alexis lifted 2 hands in the air, trying to get our attention. Does this mean we're going to have a famous writer with us, following us around 24 hours a day? I lifted 1 eyebrow and narrowed my gaze at her. I am a writer who lives with you and follows you around 24 hours a day. Laughter filled the air. Alexis shrank down into her seat. Oh, yeah, I forgot. What about you, Anna? I turned to our 17-year-old daughter, who hadn't made a peep yet. She was the easygoing one of the bunch, who didn't get her feathers ruffled often. Also, she was one of the ones I would rarely hear complain. I think we have a 50-50 chance of succeeding, she commented. With this group, I think it'll be hard. I looked to 23-year-old Nathan next. He was our youngest biological child, and he had gone from being the youngest to having 7 younger siblings. Like Anna, he was our contemplative soul who rarely complained, but he was our child who'd been most impacted by the adoptions as we went from a quiet house to one filled with disruption. Numerous times every day, when whines and moans followed every request from me, Nathan would look at me with his Eeyore-like gaze as if saying, "Can't we do something about all this complaining and whining, Mom?" I'd try, of course, to get them to stop. No need to complain about that, I'd say, or let's try to say that again without whining. My favorite was, I don't understand whinies. Why don't you try that again? But my constant reminders did nothing to bring about change. Nathan crossed his arms, set them on the table, and nodded. I won't say it's impossible, but... But? I asked. He lifted his eyebrows and sighed, as if truly understanding the difficulty of the challenge. Like Anna said, it'll be hard, but it's worth a shot. That's the important thing to remember. This is going to be hard, John responded. It's not as if we're trying to be perfect. Instead, it's something we'll need to work on. But does this mean we can't tell people when we need something? Alexis asked. Will we have to be good all the time? As we waited for our food, John explained a bit more. No one's good all the time. Even Mom and I mess up. A lot. God doesn't expect any of us to be perfect, but complaining is something he takes seriously. Remember how Moses led the Israelites into the desert according to God's command? Well, they had a lot of needs in that desert, and God knew that. But instead of asking God to meet their needs and trusting he would, the Israelites complained. Complaining is wanting our way without treating others or God with respect. Everyone listened, and I was surprised how well they were paying attention, although I shouldn't have been. Each time we'd added children to our home through adoption, we had experienced a lot of challenges. Yet John and I had learned that the kids' wrong behavior mostly came from not being taught what was right. Time and time again, when we taught right behavior and attitudes, the kids rose to the occasion. We had already taught our kids big things like how to talk rather than yell and how to keep our personal spaces neat and clean. Well, we were still working on that. We taught chores and how to support each other within our home. Now it was time to train our kids on the little habits that sometimes were easy to overlook. Things that nibbled away at the peace and joy in our home bit by bit. Things like grumbling. From the conversation around the restaurant table, it sounded like everyone was on board, and I took a deep breath. The weariness of the trip intensified as the responsibility of what the year to come now held rushed over me. Suddenly, the idea became reality, and the project became serious. I knew, because we'd mentioned both the challenge and the cruise, the kids would never let us back down now. Never. I also knew this challenge had to start with John and me. We needed to set up a framework that would teach and guide our kids without discouraging them. Setting basic goals for ourselves would be the first place to start. I sighed as the waitress approached our table with the first tray of food. I took the cloth napkin from the table and spread it across my lap, both worry and excitement causing my stomach to do a small flip. This challenge was going to be harder for me than I thought, but it would also be so worth it. Taking a family of 11, full of personalities and viewpoints and individual struggles, through an entire year without grumbling was a monumental task. But I sensed we were on the verge of something special, and I couldn't wait to see what God had in the works.